Hello and welcome back to Sharp Scratch. You're listening to episode 106, Why I Still Love Medicine. This is a podcast brought to you by the BMJ, where medical students, junior doctors, and expert guests come together and discuss all the things you need to know to be a good doctor, but that you might not get taught at medical school. My name is Eva, and I've just finished my third year as a medical student at Lancaster University. This year, I'm working at the BMJ as the editorial scholar, looking after all the content that BMJ student will be producing this year. Today, we're joined by our panelists, Anna and Sarah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Anna. Those of you who have listened to Sharp Scratch for a while may recognise me as a former editorial scholar, but I'm coming to you today from beautiful, sunny, actually, Newcastle, where I'm currently in my first year of specialty training in obstetrics and gynaecology. And I think this is my first episode since I started my specialty training. So yeah, as I was just saying before we started, increasingly less junior doctor, but hopefully I've still got something to offer everyone.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a final year medical student based in Milton Keynes. Just finished my cancer care rotation and looking forward to winding down for Christmas.
Lovely. It's so brilliant to have you both recording with us today. So morale has been pretty low in medicine recently with ongoing industrial action and the recent AIMS study published in BMJ Open finding that almost one third of us plan to leave the NHS within 2 years of graduating. It can sometimes be difficult to remain optimistic about the future and a career in medicine, but it's a brand new year. And so I thought we should start out this year on a more positive note and spend this episode talking about why we still love medicine. So Anna, I know that you are a great advocate for loving medicine. So tell me a little bit about why you do or still do.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying really resonates with me, because I think particularly when I was a senior medical student, I do remember going onto the wards and, sometimes, and Sarah, I don't know if you're having this in the moment as a final year, all the junior doctors are like, oh, get out while you can, this is, make sure that you've got something else lined up that you can do. I think it can be very dispiriting. And I think that there are a lot, as you've, alluded to, obviously there's been the industrial action, which I have participated in throughout. And, there's a lot of, I think, news stories about, all healthcare professionals not being able to give the care that they want to give because of the pressures on the system. And all of that is true. But I am still very glad that I chose at the age of 18, but actually I decided I wanted to be a doctor when I was about 12 or 13 years old. And I think a lot of people who, have come straight into medical school from school will have been thinking about it as early as that. And, it's been a really long time, and it was really hard work for me to become a doctor. And I'm still absolutely thrilled that I managed to do that and that that's my job, because 12-year-old me, I don't think would believe it. So yeah, I think, you've got to back yourself that all of this hard work and dedication and, maybe social occasions that you've missed throughout the time that you've been doing your A-levels or, whatever qualifications you did at school and then throughout medical school are kind of worth it, because it's a really cool job, I think, for a lot of reasons. But Sarah, yeah, I don't know. It's been a while, I haven't been at medical school for nearly 3 years now. So I don't know what it's like being a final year medical student. Are we still trying to put you off?
No, it's actually really funny you should say that, because I think even from when I was in my A-levels and doing work experiences, before I got into medical school, doctors were already trying to put me off. And I heard about all the reasons why you shouldn't do it and all of that kind of stuff. And that really scared me, to be honest. That made me very unsure. And that's why, part of the reason why I didn't go straight into medical school at 18, because you know, I was scared. I'm like, I don't want to sacrifice 5 years of my life and like all this hard work and blood, sweat and tears, and then like come out and hate myself and hate my job and like go and work in a bank. so I kind of did it the other way, which almost seems a bit crazier, because then, you know, I did my undergrad, I did my master's, I actually had a whole different job in a whole different industry. And I had friends who were in medical school and they told me how terrible it was. And then still at some point I was like, maybe I should try this out after all. And so I did, and here I am. And it's definitely been, a wild experience. Nothing like I really thought it would be. However, I think I always knew I would enjoy medical school. I think my fear was I just didn't know if I wanted to be a doctor. But I think coming into it as kind of like a mature student and having like other life experiences, I think it's almost helped me love it more, because, you know, I'm certain like this is what I want to do first of all. I see the impact of actually being able to be there and, you know, help the person in front of you. And that's, you know, very different from any other job you could be doing as well. You know, I like the aspect of like continuous learning. I'm a very like curious person, and I think that's why medicine kind of stood out to me, because like I said, I always knew I'd enjoy learning all this stuff. This is stuff like I Google in my spare time, like why is this happening and why does this person have this symptom, or if someone's ill, like I want to know what's going on. But obviously medical school, you know, exams make it scary, and obviously people's lives could be on the line, so you have to know what you're doing. But yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's a great job and there's nothing really else like it. And I think, yeah, you just get a lot of personal fulfillment from it. You never really wonder like, oh, why am I getting out of bed today? So I guess that's why I would say I'm still here for now.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to me, Sarah, that you like your final year, you're in the absolute throes of like exam hell at the moment.
Literally.
You haven't experienced like being a doctor yet, and you volunteered for this podcast, which I think if I wasn't the host, I would be a bit like, do I still love medicine? So you must like, I feel like if you're loving medicine at this stage in your career, which as Anna has described and as I've seen through my housemates, you're like a bit more advanced in medical school. Like if you love it now, you must be like absolutely set. Like
I think
if you can tolerate this, being a doctor will be amazing.
I mean, I hope so. I think it's definitely a mindset thing. As Anna mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things that are just, you know, not working well in the system. And when you think of like those individual factors and like working conditions and, you know, just pay and all that rest of it, it can be very disheartening. But I would say maybe one thing I have to my advantage is, you know, because I do have outside experience, I also know like a job is a job, right? And you get out of it as much as you put into it. It's what you make of it. So you know, if you enjoy what you do, then, you know, those systemic factors, they could be hurdles, but they shouldn't kind of change it for you. So I think like that's really important as well.
For me, I've always had an awareness of I guess like the flexibility of medicine, and you know, I appreciate that within the training program, like, you know, I've done my foundation years, I'm in a training program now, and yeah, it's maybe not as flexible as potentially when you're a consultant. I mean, I don't know, because I'm years and years away from that, and that still seems really scary to me. But you know, I previously did the job that Eva's doing, so I know that there's opportunities like within medicine to step out of that system for a year or two or maybe longer if that's what you want to do, but still have an element of clinical work. And in my specialty, obstetrics and gynecology, we have a large you know, a large workforce of SAS and specialty doctors who can become very senior if they want to, or are able to work at the level of a registrar. And that, again, affords you a lot more flexibility potentially than being a registrar within a training program. So I think, you know, one thing that is a real positive about medicine for me is that it does have all of these opportunities within it to work in different ways. And you can, you know, make a portfolio career. And I think that is much more prevalent now than it was when I was even a senior medical student. And I think it's much more accepted by a lot of the Royal Colleges as well. So for instance, again, my specialty, which, you know, is known for being an intense specialty that has, you know, a lot of intense situations to deal with. But, you know, they are quite flexible about working less than full-time. Almost all of my registrars work less than full-time for various different reasons. And those are kind of my role models going forwards. So I think, you know, that is something that is a big positive about medicine compared to other careers. And that probably sounds really like silly, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, medicine's like way less flexible than other careers. But actually, when I think about like the jobs that my friends do, like, yeah, they work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, but actually they don't really have as many opportunities for, you know, going and doing something different, or the kind of personal development that you're expected to engage in as a doctor. So, you know, in a lot of ways, those opportunities being there are, you know, really good in medicine. And I do always think, you know, being someone, Sarah, unlike you, who came straight from school and has gone straight through. So I did do an intercalated year and I did my year at the BMJ, but I didn't take I went straight from medical school into foundation. Now I've come straight from foundation into specialty training, which I think is kind of unusual. And I joke that I'm the last doctor on earth that still enjoys their job enough to not have wanted to do an F3. but you know, it's, I don't think I could have made a decision on what to do when I was 18 that would have led to more options, because I think you study medicine for 5 years and then you can do any specialty, any specialty you want. If, you know, you could be a psychiatrist, you could be a neurosurgeon. I don't know if those are the two things that are like most far apart in my head. They're like kind of the same like area of the body, but like as far apart away.
I was going to say all the way from pathology to public health and everything in between.
That's fantastic. That sounds so pretty as well.
Exactly.
It's so, I guess, encouraging and very cool to be on this podcast hearing you say that, Anna, because I am famously, like, among my friends, less enthusiastic about medicine. I'm definitely, as I've kind of alluded to, I do tend to be a bit negative, cynical about the systemic issues in it, but I do genuinely love it. And I think it's so true that kind of if you can see it, you can be it. And in the last, I want to say year or two, maybe since the pandemic, there has been like this trend of me seeing people like yourself, Anna. You're one of these people. I don't think you're like, not bragged about it, but I don't think you've acknowledged it enough. Like, you are an obs and gynae trainee, but you're also like a researcher. You also do med ed. Like, you are so kind of, you're still early on in your career, and yet you've managed to cover so many cool things with it already. You've done this job at the BMJ, like, and more and more people are doing that. I'm seeing more and more people do that. And when they're all so different, they're all medicine. And I think in other careers you could, or with other degrees, you can do as wide a variety of things, but less of those things that you can do will be as applicable to your subject, if that makes sense. So it's very cool. I feel like, without fangirling over my friends, it's good to have like mentors.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like, you know, that saying like you can't become what you don't see is definitely very true. And I think I can definitely speak to this, because that was a lot of my struggle with whether to become a doctor or not. You know, I was turning up to work experience and I'll dress nice, and, you know, they'll be like, oh, doctors don't dress well. Like, you can't be a doctor and be into fashion or whatever. I don't think I was that into fashion. I just, you know, like to dress well, you know, and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, in the past, I feel like it was almost like you had to be this kind of person to be a doctor, and those boundaries are being broken down a lot more now. And, you know, it's kind of seen like it's okay to be multifaceted, it's okay to have different interests, and actually those interests are an asset to your medical career, it's an asset to, you know, handling your patients and just handling life. And you don't have to, you know, fit this cookie cutter version of what a doctor is supposed to be. And I think like that's opened so many more doors for people to kind of like explore. And, you know, obviously leaving my previous job to come and study medicine, I knew like it was always really, really important that I'm doing this because, you know, I enjoy it. But for me to keep enjoying it, I need to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and I'm making, you know, the job work for me. It's not just about turning up every day. Like, as much as I love medicine, I'm not trying to be in a hospital like, you know, all day, every day. For the rest of my life, like, I want to be able to explore other interests, I want to be able to do other things, but I still want to see my patients, I still want to have that fulfillment that comes from doing a job that's really important and that I really enjoy. And so You know, I've definitely heard both sides, like, and I think like sometimes complaining is a coping mechanism because you just need to vent and that's okay as well. But at the same time, you kind of just need to be mindful because it's kind of what you're feeding your mind. And if you kind of just keep complaining through it, then it's really hard to enjoy it. But if you actually, you know, change your perspective and try and find some balance, then it becomes a bit more palatable.
100%. And I think, you know, I always found it very unkind when people were like, oh, well, you know, get out while you can. And so especially about my specialty, like, God, the amount of people, if I ever said I was interested in obstacles, oh, rather you than me and all of this. And I think there is a, you know, sometimes there is a lot of negativity and I can understand why. And I can't, you know, there's pressures and it's busy. It is busy. But I do also think that, like, I don't know, we should be encouraging of each other, shouldn't we? I always try really hard, like, I had a lovely wee medical student the other day. I said, we're going for this elective C-section list. I said, okay, so what are you interested in? And he said, I'm interested in rheumatology. And I said, oh, that's amazing. This is a bit different to that. But, you know, it's still, like, cool to see, like, you know, you might not get the opportunity. If you're not interested in a specialty, this might be your last opportunity as a final year med student to see a baby get born. I was like, let's get you scrubbed and all of this. And is there anything you need to sign off that we can do for you? So, you know, even if like people are not necessarily interested in what you're doing, I just think it's nice to be encouraging of other people. And I think this was, you know, this was another one of the reasons why when I look back, like I never would have, I don't think, been able to really sort of verbalize this at the time. But like, I'm from a big family and like, that's my community. And I think that one of the reasons why medicine did appeal to me was because there was a community. And, you know, it's a community that has a lot of problems. And it's a community that is not only, you know, doctors in the UK or healthcare professionals in the UK. It's a global community of healthcare professionals. And it's also a community that stretches back temporally, right? So, you know, and there's stuff that doctors have done in the past that, you know, are really, really bad. And that's something that we have to reckon with as a profession and as a community. But we are a group of people nominally with a united aim. And I think that really appealed to me as well, like being part of a community. And I think that that is potentially something that has broken down a little bit, particularly I think for foundation doctors and very junior doctors who are rotating and don't necessarily have that support of the medical community in the same way that they might have done, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago with the firm structures and things like that. So I think that sometimes it is, you know, as you say, Sarah, like having that perspective that you can be supportive of other people and you're going to get that support back if you are, you know, creating those communities and that environment where, you know, people are able to come and be honest and say, well, I've had a really difficult day and XYZ happened. But then sort of leaving that behind, I think, like leaving that in that conversation and not having to go home, I guess, and like ruminate over things as well. And having the opportunity to share those difficult situations that you might find yourself in, like as a junior doctor. And I think that's super important as well. And I guess I have been really lucky in that I, for the most part, in all my foundation jobs have had an element of that community, which has made it a lot easier. I think, you know, it must be very, very difficult if you feel alone. And I think that's something that, you know, going forward, we probably need to focus on in terms of sort of staff morale, particularly for people who are in that transition, like going into F1 and, you know, it's hard. And we deal with a lot of hard stuff, but I don't know, for me, it's sort of like, of course it's going to be hard because it's so brilliant.
Oh, what a line, Anna.
Well, no, you know, like you work hard on things, don't you? Because they're important. Like stuff that's not important is easy, right?
That, like, it, not to be so cliche, that like actually does really make Like, it does really make you think about it. Like, nothing worth having comes easy.
Absolutely.
I suppose. And it's especially, I think, with the speciality you're in, like, obs and gynae really is like the highest of highs and the lowest of lows of medicine. So I'm sure you probably feel that, like, more than...
Oh, shh, don't say that. You have all the other specialties in the comments on Twitter being like, actually, actually, this is very difficult. All the specialties are difficult, everyone.
Yeah, there's no... This came up yesterday as well. There is no easy speciality. And I wanted to be a psychiatrist before I wanted to be a doctor. And I came into medicine all guns blazing, being like, I'm going to be a psychiatrist. I had all my work experience basically was in psychiatry because this was all I had wanted to do my whole life. And then I got to medical school, and then the preclinical was lovely. And then all of the doctors in medicine and surgery were like, you're doing a whole medical degree to be a psychiatrist. Like, you're wasting a medical degree. And I was like, what is that telling me at like 19, 20 years old? Like, I think you're so right. It makes it so much easier when you have people just backing you.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, it actually did happen to me in Ops and Gynae. Maybe that's why I'm being so kind. But like, I had midwives be like, oh, well, psychiatry's really cool. Mental health comes into everything. And I was like, thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, like, you know, especially doing what we do, first of all, finding your tribe, finding your peer group that kind of understands what you're going through and, you know, can relate to you, whether that's in your medical school or elsewhere, is so important. But then also just having, like, you know, mentors or people ahead of you who can kind of shed that positive influence, because even like my best clinical rotations has been the ones where there have been people who've taken an interest in me, or I've been like, oh, hey, like, you know, this is really cool, like, I'm interested. And they're like, yeah, come and see me. Oh, what do you want to work on? What, you know, kind of what Anna said. And I think, like, people don't realize that makes such a huge impact, because, you know, the specials, when you go in and like you don't get acknowledged, you don't get recognized, you just think like, I don't want to be like you, so I probably don't want to do this. And that just kind of closes the door.
Thanks so much for that, everyone. We will talk a little bit more about why we love medicine and maybe hear from some more doctors about why they love medicine, but that'll be after this message.
But yeah, what I was going to say is, obviously, not to be disingenuous, because I've been thinking about it, and there are a lot of things that are stressful in medicine. So maybe just like from you guys' experience, what would be some of the reasons that you've heard or you've seen that people have kind of fallen out of love with doing what they do? Because I think, like, you know, I remember, especially amongst my friends, one thing that is a huge frustration is the feeling like your life is kind of on hold, especially when you're a medical student, and especially when you've come into it from like another degree or something. You kind of see maybe your friends like moving along in life, you know, getting promotions at work, you know, getting married, having children, all that kind of stuff. And you just kind of feel like I'm just stuck at a certain point in my life. Like, I'm basically still in school and I'm missing all these life events. Like, I can't go to this wedding, or I can't just go on holiday with these guys. And, you know, I can't do all these things that, you know, people your age might be doing. So I don't know, what is it for some of you, for you, that you've kind of feel like could be a reason that, yeah, people just get a bit jaded over time?
I'm actually so glad that you like brought that up, or like acknowledged that, Sarah, because it's managing expectations, really, isn't it? It's like, I call it a cultural naivety. I don't come from a family of medics. I didn't really know any doctors coming up, like, growing up. Where I come from, not a lot of people go and be doctors, so I just didn't know so much about the culture of it, and that came as a real like shock to me. So I think that's something, certainly in the past, that I have become pretty jaded with. I guess not the content of medicine, not the actual day-to-day practice of it, but these kind of unseen cultural aspects of it, which just didn't meet what I thought it was going to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it kind of does, and I kind of resonate with that, because I think the fact that I was doing something else, and I had friends in medical school telling me, you know, how bad it was, basically, from their perspective, in my head, I, you know, kind of hyped up to be like, oh, it's going to be really terrible. So I came in expecting it to be really terrible, and then actually it wasn't so bad. So managing expectations is definitely important, you know.
Yeah,
I agree.
Works both ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, like, what you were saying, Sarah, about feeling like your life is on hold. I mean, obviously, I had not had a career before or anything like that, so maybe it was like slightly different for me. But I do definitely remember thinking, particularly after I'd had my year at the BMJ, where I was like very independent and I was making decisions about things by myself and I was paid, which was
nice,
you know, wild. And I remember going back, I went back into, I did it between like my penultimate and final years of medical school. So I went back into my final year of medical school, and that was a very frustrating year for me because I felt quite ready to move on to the next stage of my life, like actually being qualified and being a doctor. And it just couldn't come quick enough. But I think I had that awareness that I was trying to like get ahead of myself as well. And it is a really tricky place to be because I did start looking around and thinking, oh, you know, I've been basically at uni for 7 years and lots of my friends didn't go to university. So, you know, they're 7 years into their careers, like exactly as you say, like thinking about buying houses and things like that. And it is tough. But I think, you know, the other thing is like you can't let your life be on hold. Because
absolutely,
you know, it's such a trite thing to say in some ways, because it's like, it's easy enough for me to sit here and say this. And if you're in that situation, like it feels like you don't have much choice. But you know, there should be some flexibility there if you can find it and ask for it. And I mean, I got married when I was in my final year of medical school. So, I wasn't messing about. Do you know what I mean?
Like, a woman on a mission. She had a plan.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, like, then you qualify and you're an F1 and everything's really new. And it's, you know, particularly your first job when you're getting used to things is really tiring. And, you know, then that doesn't seem a good time to do, you know, life stuff. And then you're in F2 and you're potentially applying for specialty jobs and all of this. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're in the middle of your specialty training and you maybe haven't done some of the things outside of work that maybe you wanted to do. And it's very easy for it to happen. So I think being mindful of the things that you want outside of your career is super important. And I think that can make things a lot easier. Again, you know, kind of as you were saying, Sarah, like you have that perspective because like, even now, I mean, as you say, Eva, like I'm an academic clinical fellow. So I partially do research, partially do clinical. I've got my clinical training. It's quite intense during the first sort of few years so that you can learn all the skills that you need to be a registrar. And I've got my research and things like that. But ultimately, like my family and my personal life is the most important thing for me. Like I have to have that balance because, you know, at the end of my career, I want to turn around and think, yes, I've done good in my career, but I also want to have, you know, someone to spend my retirement with. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Do you know, that's actually something that I get so frustrated with about medicine, and I guess how long it is, but also how little control you have over where you are. I'm doing this very long degree that keeps me in this city for years beyond when all of my friends from university will be in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating about medicine because it nearly feels like how much of it, like as you said at the start, Sarah, it's a job.
Yeah.
So why does the job dictate where you live? I guess I get it at medical school, but why does it continue to dictate where you live until you're a consultant?
I think so. And I think that's also really important because, you know, that was also part of my naivety coming in. I didn't actually really know a lot about how all that works. I just, you know, knew you go to medical school, you become a doctor. I think even till now, the whole kind of training pathway is, it's interesting how they don't really tell you anything about that in medical school. And you just kind of figure it out on your own as it happens. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, I think I'm definitely with you, Eva. I think that's something that needs to be reformed, right? Because maybe at the time that it was put in place, it made sense. But if it's not making sense anymore, then why are we still kind of holding it up?
Much to ponder. Yeah, like, let's be real here. This podcast is about, you know, still being in love with medicine. We are not saying that medicine is perfect.
Yeah.
Like, we're not saying that being a doctor is perfect, but it is perfect for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the way that I currently have my career set up is, I think, the best that I was going to manage. You know, I can't imagine myself doing anything else.
Yeah. No, but I think that's really nice, because I think the takeaway is that you've kind of made it work for you. You've tailored it to your interests, what you enjoy, you know, how much you want to work and when. And yeah, I think that's maybe something for ourselves and the listeners to take away, that, you know, if you want to stay in love with it, or if you want to keep doing it long term, then you do have to kind of make it work for you. You can't just kind of get tossed whichever way the wind blows, because then you definitely will probably hate it. So you kind of do need to take a bit of ownership over your life and your career, and just like, don't wait till medical school's over to enjoy things. And you know, even whilst you're in training, whilst you're kind of working your way up, just finding those little pockets of passion and energy, whether that's within medicine or in other interests, to just kind of, yeah, keep you going.
Yeah, you're completely, completely right. We'll take a short break now, and then right after that, we will hear from some other doctors about why they still love medicine, and maybe share some of our best anecdotes too. Welcome back to the show. So we asked doctors on Twitter to send in why they still love medicine, and this is an A&E doctor in London who sent a lovely anecdote in. Let's hear.
Hi Eva, my name's Jingi. I'm an A&E doctor in East London. I saw Abby Rimmer's tweet about doctors who still enjoy their jobs, and I thought I'd reach out. I've been a doctor for 5 years now. I trained at the University of Southampton, and I've spent most of my training in North East London, where I'm from. I have a huge privilege to be able to look after the people who come from my own community, which is hugely important to me, because historically my community has been quite deprived, been a hub for migrants, and has complex socioeconomic health needs. Every day, I still wake up and look forward to my job. I know it's a huge privilege to care for people when they're sick, injured, and dying. I enjoy it so much that I still recommend it to young people as a career choice and a course at university. I do a lot of work around widening participation, and do a lot of work around health inequalities, which balances out my clinical work and puts things into perspective for policymakers.
That was just so lovely. And thank you very much for sending that in, Jingi. It's something that rings true to me a lot. I think I come from quite a rural area, and as I say, not a lot of doctors do come from that area. So even though I'm studying on a completely different landmass, I think what he says there really resonates with me. I can imagine that's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, and I mean, I must say, having known Jingi for a good while now, he's being very, very modest in that clip. And he does amazing work, not just in London, but also around the world through a charity that he's involved with. But yeah, it totally resonates with me as well. You know, I don't work where I'm from, but I work with women. And that is an enormous privilege for me, because, you know, women, there's a big gender health gap, and often I work with women who are of a similar age to myself, who perhaps it may well, you know, in their first pregnancy be their first real interaction with healthcare services, secondary healthcare services. And, you know, for me, it's really, really important that those experiences are as good as they can be, because that can set the tone for someone's interactions with healthcare for the rest of their lives. It's really important to me that those experiences are handled sensitively, and it feels, again, like I don't want to be cliched or trite, but it's a privilege. It's a privilege to be with people during happy days and also during sad ones. And my specialty has a lot of both, which is something that's really nice about it. But yeah, I love working with women. We're a very female heavy specialty as well. So yeah, I don't know how much that shaped my choice of specialty. But yeah, it's a lovely clip from Jingi.
Absolutely. I think like Anna covered it really well. I think, yeah, just not to rout the cliches, but like she said, it is, you know, a privilege to get to do what we do. And I think as long as we don't lose that awe for the job, then that kind of keeps it fresh and exciting. Yeah, because, you know, we might see a lot of the same presentations and the same cases, but at the end of the day, we're dealing with humans and everyone has a different story and a different life experience. And I think for me, that is one of the things that makes me enjoy the job, because I just genuinely like connecting with people and having that conversation and being able to help if I can. But even if I can't, you know, just having that conversation can make a difference in someone's day. And actually, I can't help a lot because I'm a medical student, but yeah.
I completely agree, but I think the experience of a medical student is such a privilege. And we've used that word so many times now, but it is like, I am literally someone off, like, just, I'm just someone, you know, I'm just a person. I'm not a doctor. And like, these amazing patients trust me with their stories, trust me with like the most vulnerable times in their lives. And I get to play a part in that, even through just having a conversation with them, making a cup of tea. And I do not take that for granted. I it's definitely my favorite part of the degree. I think it's the thing that keeps me like hanging in there when I'm not enjoying the MLA content map. The patients make it worthwhile.
The patients definitely make it worthwhile. And sometimes they are so funny.
Absolutely.
Tell me more about that.
So I don't know, maybe I went to quite a serious medical school, right? Like, in terms of like, there were a lot of people whose parents were doctors. It's King's College London, big campus, whatever. So I always thought, like, until I qualified and started practicing, that I had to be serious to be taken seriously. But actually, sometimes things are just funny, and like, it's totally okay to like have a laugh with a patient. If the patient's laughing, like, you can laugh. And like, it's just sometimes people just come out with the funniest things, and you're not laughing at them, obviously. You're laughing with them. But I think that that's something that's like really not discussed very much, is like how genuinely enjoyable, not just in a sort of, this is such a privilege that I'm helping people, which is important as well, but how genuinely enjoyable it can be to just like have these chats with people and like find out about their lives and be like, oh, that's super interesting. Like, I've met people who do loads of super interesting jobs, like who have loads of super interesting hobbies, like, and it's just cool. Like, it's just cool to meet all these people. And, you know, as you say, like, sometimes you don't have a lot to offer them. I think, especially reflecting on my experience working in general practice as a foundation doctor, you know, a lot of the times I didn't have an enormous amount of quote unquote medicine to offer them. But yeah, just being there, having a chat, like, human to human, you know. I think sometimes we put up this sort of really very artificial barrier between doctors and patients, and like, ultimately I can't even believe I'm saying this, we're all just people. Like, we're all just people. Everything's a bit wild. And, you know, we're just trying to get through it.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, just, you know, you're allowed to enjoy it. Like, you're allowed to enjoy it. I feel like I almost feel like sometimes it's a bit of a taboo for me to say, like, I really enjoy my job.
And when, yeah, that's exactly it. It's not just patients trusting you with their stories, it's them telling you about like their pets or like the people that they love or the things that they love. And that is like humanity. I think to in many ways medicine just is like humanity in a profession.
It's that human touch. I think it's really important. And just, you know, like you said, having those real connections and interactions, it does help break up the day. You know, I feel like medicine is not one of those jobs where you go in and you're watching the clock. The time generally does fly by, and this is why people knowingly or unknowingly spend their whole lives in hospitals, because you kind of get sucked in, because you are having a good time, I think, you know, if you're in the right teams and, you know, having cool, interesting patients. And like I said, coming from my background, you know, I really didn't see myself trying to do hospital medicine. I just thought, like, I'll enjoy this, it's interesting, and then, you know, I'll find a specialty that kind of works with the lifestyle that I want to have and take it from there. But yeah, just being in hospital, seeing the patients, all of that stuff is genuinely interesting. And I'm like scared, because I'm like, oh my god, I can spend 20 years in here and I won't even know what happened. So yeah, just don't have too much fun, basically.
Do you know what's also great? You know, if something happens to you and you become unwell, you spend 48 hours of your week in a hospital. So, you know, You're in the right place.
That's true, but I don't think I've figured out how to use that to my advantage yet. The other day, literally like 2 days ago, I was in one of the ward rounds and I just started having this massive nosebleed.
Oh,
and
no.
It just like wouldn't stop. And everyone's like, oh, are you going to go to A&E? And I'm like, no, I don't want to sit there for like 4 hours. And literally drove home with my nose bleeding. It was very disgusting. It eventually did stop.
So let's hear from someone outside of hospital land then about why he still loves general practice. And this is Dr. Williams.
I'm Dr. Mark Williams, and this is why I still love being a GP. I don't want to sound pretentious, but I still love being a GP due to the concept of eudaimonia. This is otherwise known as the pursuit of human flourishing. To be happy, one must have your basic needs met, pursue your vocation, and ensure that your life has meaning, and also do good, love, and be loved. That sounds pretty woolly, as you might expect from a GP. So let me break it down. Basic needs. It's getting harder to make ends meet in general practice, but living comfortably is still possible so long as you save enough money to pay your tax bill. Vocation and meaning. I know that to some in the medical profession, actually to some in the BMJ, vocation is a dirty word, a device used to exploit us. I don't care. I'm a GP, I'm not a primary care consultant, not a public sector worker, not a simple cog in the machine. It's not just my job, it's a part of my identity. The low self-esteem part of my psyche enjoys being needed by the community. I love the thrill of a new diagnosis, solving an issue with the management of a long-term condition, or dealing with an acute presentation. It's a huge privilege to develop relationships with patients as we serve families from cradle to grave. Doing good. Yes, we work long hours. As a GP partner, working hours are more like a guide than an actual rule. We usually do between 11 and 12 hours per day, with some paperwork on the weekends. It's hard, but our patients appreciate what we do. I've worked in CCGs, GP federations, NHS England, NHS trusts. Nothing beats to the satisfaction of direct patient contact, and no part of medicine is more direct than general practice. We do good every day, and we get to follow up patients and quickly see the positive results. Loving and being loved. Now, this is the cringiest reason why I love being a GP. I love the communities that I serve. I love who I get to work with, doctors, managers, clinical and non-clinical staff. I've known one of my partners since I was 16 years old and another since I was 24. Despite all the pressures in the health service, in general practice, we all work together for a shared goal. Everyone goes the extra mile for each other. I think we are very lucky in general practice because we can have teams that can grow together for many years, still have a good deal of autonomy and mutual trust. The job is definitely getting harder, but we still manage to enjoy ourselves, have lots of banter, and also work hard to serve our community. In summary, I still love general practice because it puts food on my table, I'm doing what I need to do, I'm doing good, and I love my community and the colleagues that I work with.
It might be because it's nearly Christmas, but that's actually made me quite emotional.
Aww.
I totally resonate with it. And I think that was a really, really lovely clip.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's making me want to be a GP now. I don't know, I can't make up my mind. But I just liked what he said about, you know, being able to be with your patients and having that personal contact. And I think we've talked a lot more about it today. And, you know, I think it's interesting and it's nice because even though we say like it's a privilege to get to do what we do, it is. And it's because of that access and, you know, that we have to these patients. So it is the patients that do really make it worthwhile. And so it's nice, to hear him as a GP kind of expand on that and talk about like the importance of actually having that continuity of care And, you know, having your team that you've worked with for years and years and years, and your community that you've worked with, and maybe you saw them when they were kids and now they're having their own kids and you're looking after the whole family. And yeah, that's just like so lovely.
It makes me a little bit homesick, you know, but I always will have a soft spot for GPs and good old general practice. Like, I think it gets so much bashing in medical school, with this cultural thing, but I think it's just obviously such a difficult profession, but it seems to be just such a lovely one too.
And I totally agree with what he was saying about identity. You know, I think, you know, being a doctor is a huge part of my identity, and I'm not ashamed of that because it's what I spend over 48 hours of my week doing. How could it not become part of my identity? Of course I'm going to come home and think about my patients and you know, worry that they're okay. And I think as long as you don't let that overtake your whole life, then that's totally okay, and that actually makes it, you know, far more enjoyable and meaningful to do that job. And I think sometimes I do feel that, sort of, you know, there is a lot of talk about how, oh, you know, it's just a job, you should be able to leave things at work. And I think that's a bit of a cop-out. Like, I think that is a cop-out from people who don't feel that doctors need looking after when they're outside of work, because they do. Because how can you not let those experiences shape who you are? And I had this conversation, I remember having this conversation in the summer, like between when I was just coming out of F2 and going into my specialty training. I'm 27 years old. Like, how many other 27-year-olds in the country have been present at multiple births, have held multiple people's hands as they took their last breaths, have communicated with people's families that people are in their last weeks to days of life, communicated to people's families that people have died? You know, it's, how can you not let that affect you? You'd have to be like some, I don't know, superhuman.
I completely agree with everything that you just said there. I think I've just handled it in a different way. So for my own well-being and for my own mental health, I've had to make that separation. With the identity thing, I've had to define myself outside of medicine. I've had to say, like, I'm a 22-year-old and I do medicine. I'm a medical student. I'm studying to be a doctor rather than I'm a medical student. Just purely because I think when I tangled myself up in the whole identity of being a medic, I let that consume me a little bit. I allowed it to define too much of who I am, and I guess based a lot of my self-esteem on how well I was coping with things that I wasn't able to cope with. We could literally do a whole podcast on this. This is such an interesting little tangent.
Maybe you should, yeah.
No, because I think it's definitely kind of a bit of both. And I think, you know, you do have to be kind of aware of where you draw the lines, because as Anna said, just by virtue of what we do and where we are for the majority of our time, it does play a huge role in defining us. But I do agree with you with Eva that, you know, you are an individual first. And that's why, you know, when it comes to like fitting these stereotypes or, you know, having even just the weight on your shoulders, like, oh, you can't put the profession into disrepute. So I was speaking to actually one of the older GPs I know, and obviously he's from a few generations above and stuff. And it was really funny to me actually, because so he's amazing. He's obviously has a medical degree. He also studied law at some point. So he has a law degree and he's like, you know, an amazing grade 8, like instrumentalist. And he really loves like playing the piano. And he's like a jazz, you know, enjoys playing jazz piano. But he was saying to me how like, oh, you know, like I just can't go out and go into like a jazz club and play the piano because, you know, I'm a doctor. And I was like, oh, no, you can. Like, do you know what I mean? You enjoy that. Like, you should do that. That would be amazing. And he's like, no, like, if I ever go out and play, like, you know, I wear a wig and a hat. So, like, no one recognizes me because, you know, I can't just be, like, in these clubs. And, you know, and it was kind of cute, but it was also really sad because I feel like, you know, back in the day, that was a different time. And maybe they had a lot more of those things because it would be frowned upon to be, like, I don't know, a dodgy place, like, being a lowly piano player, which doesn't really make sense. But I'm like, it's 2023. Like, trust me, you can do both and you should. So I think it's important to find that difference. But I think one thing I also wanted to say was kind of the human factors side of it as well, because Yeah, just in terms of like being a doctor, like you said, Eva, is really about how well you can take care of yourself. And if you kind of prioritize and preserve your well-being, then you'll have a lot more like longevity in your career. And I think, you know, being a doctor and you're put into a lot of these like high pressure situations and you're just kind of thrown into sink or swim. And I know like we had one training in med school, which, yeah, just really opened my eyes to certain things. And it was just about, you know, human factors and like how surgeons can sometimes get like tunnel vision in their surgery because they've been operating for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, that's kind of how mistakes happen. And like if you had like a pilot that was flying a plane, like, you know, there would be breaks, there would be things put in place for their comfort, for their well-being, so that they're able to perform at the top of their jobs. And I feel like as doctors, that learning hasn't really been brought in yet in the way like shifts are structured or like having to work like 12-hour days and all that kind of stuff. I feel like the profession in itself does still have a lot of work to do to make it more I don't know what I'm looking for, but I guess more comfortable and more helpful to the doctors that do the job, because in as much as we want to enjoy the job, the profession should be making sure that we are healthy and happy and are able to work for as long as possible, because that is what is going to help the system and the patients at the end of the day.
You have such a lovely way of like summarizing things, Sarah. I always feel so uplifted after hearing you speak.
Oh, no, sorry. I feel like I'm rambling the whole time. I'm like, okay, let me just wrap it up.
No, this has been such a lovely podcast, so motivating, and made me feel so much better about going back into medical school in the summertime.
Yay.
Oh, you've got ages.
Abbott's flown in. Sadly, that is all that we've got time for today. Thank you both so much for joining us, and thanks to everyone at home for listening to this episode of Sharp Scratch. If you like our show, I'd love it if you could support us by leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts, or by sharing it with the people that you know. Tell your friends about it. That really helps people to find the show. Please do keep in touch. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Tell me a little bit about why you still love medicine. Start the new year off on a high. You can find us on social media. We are BMJ Student on Twitter, X, Facebook, and Instagram. If you'd like to hear our other episodes, subscribe to Sharp Scratch wherever you get your podcasts, and in 2 weeks' time, you'll be notified of our next episode. Until then, it is goodbye from us.
Bye. Bye.
And it's goodbye from me. Bye, everyone.